This is URN.
Hello and welcome to the Big Picture. Before we go through the big political news of the week, I'll get the panel to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Eamon.
Hi, I'm Lizzie.
Hi, I'm Phil.
I'm Lewis. Hi.
Hi, I'm Kate.
Hi, I'm Louis.
Hi, I'm Luke.
Thank you, guys. So the first story of the day is is about Conservative councillor who has said supporting the EU is treason. If some of you did not know, the UK voted to leave in the EU referendum over the summer. And a Conservative councillor, Christian Holliday, yes, that's his real name, has launched a petition calling for support for the UK membership in the European Union to be declared as treason. The petition was added to the UK government and parliament website on the 15th of October. If it attracts 100,000 signatures, parliament will be asked to consider debating it. So far, more than 1,200 people have signed it. The petition calls for Westminster to ensure the Treason Felony Act be amended to include the following offences: to imagine, devise, promote, work and encourage others to support the UK becoming a member of the European Union, to conspire the foreign powers to make the EU or part of the UK to become foreign members. So clearly this guy has strong feelings towards the EU. Do you guys agree with him?
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous. He's asking for censorship. It's basically censorship. He's banning an opinion. You can't ban an opinion in a free democracy. In terms of things like hate speech, that's different. But this is to do with membership to a supranational organisation that is... It's a controversial issue, but to censor people based on something that half the country voted for seems ridiculous to me.
Well, I don't agree with the word treason, but I agree with the sentiment. You know, the definition of treason is especially by attempting to kill or overthrow sovereign power or government. Well, over the past weeks after Brexit, we've had people that you would not normally trust. You know, Ed Miliband, Paddy Ashdown, people that couldn't care less about public opinion, you know, saying that we have to reverse this. Now Tony Blair is saying this. So I fully get why he said this. But, you know, it's just another BBC desperate story to try and paint all sort of Brexiteers are some sort of sad losers on their sofa.
The thing about treason is clearly this is an act from 1848, and when it was introduced in 1848, I'm sure that the treason that it envisaged was a very different type to the treason being suggested by Christian Holliday / Winterval. But the point about that he's making, at least, yeah, that was Louis's joke. I literally just stole that from him. I apologise, Louis. But the thing that he's saying is at least within the spirit of that original legislation, and we heard at the start that we're not allowed to ban words or something. Well, we ban the fact that people are conspiring with foreign nations to overthrow and undermine this nation, and we do that in the very act itself. That is the nature of the Treason Act. So I think the fact that it's being changed now actually is within very much the spirit of the original act, and we have to recognise that with the original nature of treason and the way that worked, this is now just a modern example of that, and it's actually quite good lawmaking, I would say, in terms of modernising and continuing in the spirit of that original legislation.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, the thing that's almost so ridiculous about this petition and suggestion is that why is supporting it? It doesn't say why wishing to support Europe is bad, like why it is bad for the country, because we still it forgets that we still need to trade with them, we still need to have diplomatic relations with them, and so we still, and the EU and Europe are two very different things as well, and so I'm a bit confused as to how he believes that we would be unable, like how he believes that we should have no advocation of any relationship with the EU at all. Louis, you look like you're going to come in on that.
No, I was going to support you there, because what he has in my mind, and I think that you can level this criticism a lot of Brexiters or Brexiteers, is that they think that we're going to have some kind of autarky, self-sufficient nature of Britain, which, to be fair, right, is completely absurd. You know, we're a tiny island in the North Atlantic. There's no way we can feed our own population with the farming land that we have. And plus, what's so bad about wanting to be back in Europe after a certain amount of time? For instance, if you know, it's the same argument with the euro. If it is more beneficial to us to become a member of the eurozone, not now, maybe in 10 years, maybe next week, I don't know, then perhaps it'll be a good idea. I mean, I just don't think we should rule something out indeterminately like Christian Holliday is suggesting. Bearing in mind, he's not even an MP, he's a small town councillor in Guildford. So, I mean, if that undermines any opinion that he might want to display, I think that is it.
Said that they will consider seeking a judicial review into a decision not to hold public inquiry into the so-called Battle of Orgrave. Home Secretary Amber Rudd told MPs a review into the clashes between police and pickets during the 1984 miners' strike was not in public interest. The Orgrave Trust and Justice Campaign, OTJC, told a press conference earlier that the gloves were off. Secretary Barbara Jackson said it may start crowdfunding to pay for the review. And I'm quoting here from Barbara: "This has been 4 years of hard work and it's taken over our lives. The campaign has no intention of collapsing or folding. The gloves are now off on our side." So, what do you guys think of the case, and do you think it should be reviewed?
I'm not sure I'm in favour of reviews in general and a lot of things, but I don't think it's right to say that it's not in the public interest, because a lot of people were affected and do care about it. I just don't think that it's the best way of spending public money, so I'm a bit torn, really. Not sure.
In general, I am very Thatcherite in my views. So one would assume that my opinion on this case would be far more in favour of government handling. However, I completely disagree with the way that the government is going about this, and I would like to see retributive justice done to those people, those families that were affected by the police clashes with the striking miners in 1984. However, there comes a point at which we as a society need to de-romanticize the visceral hatred and unintelligible admiration of the Thatcher years, and therefore I think this is going to be an element that brings that out into play once again, as did her funeral, as did the Falklands anniversary, 30th anniversary. I think the problem with the Thatcher years is that people are so split and they've romanticised their hatred and their love for her in equal measure.
I mean, firstly, I would ask you whether you've just described you're a Thatcherite, then you slowly sort of brought it down. It kind of turns out that you're not a Thatcherite. Very interesting. But as in Game of Thrones, the North remembers. So, I know, I just thought about
that. Your mic off.
Yeah. But the unions did have too much power in the 80s. That is a given. But this was the wrong way of dealing with it. New tactics was brought in by the police for this exact strike. Short-shield units were used and attacked protesters. In this country, we have a police culture of contain and maintain, not attack and attack and then maintain, as in on the continent. So that is something that needs to have a look at. But I think this is a misguided inquiry, inquiry. I think we should have an inquiry about the practices of South Yorkshire Police instead of one incident. Rotherham, Hillsborough, and Orgreave, these are all major incidents in the force's history. So why don't we have a look at the force's history instead of one isolated case?
The problems that I have with the concept of the inquiry itself, not the subject matter, but the inquiry itself, is that what you're eventually going to have, it's like when people go in with divorce lawyers, and what they have is two lawyers sat in a room talking to each other, dragging it out for as long as possible to make as much money as they can. Only this time, rather than it being private money, it's public money going towards it. For what will inevitably be a months, if not years long battle that doesn't get anywhere at any speed. And so I don't actually have off the top of my head an alternative to this. Is there clearly needs to be an investigation of some sort, like the actions were inexcusable. However, I'm not sure if an inquiry with public, paid for by public money, is the right route forward.
Well, it's a bit like Chilcot inquiry, really, isn't it? That they spent ages inquiring about what happened, noting down what happened, spending millions on what happened, when the public already knew what happened, and it hasn't changed anything. No one's been prosecuted for, as of yet, and probably will never, for what actually happened. I think the only use of having an inquiry in Orgreave is if something is actually going to come of it in the end. And I just couldn't see whether an outcome is going to come. Is our police officers going to be prosecuted? Or is that as a result of what the government has said? So then should the government have been prosecuted? It's just like, it's difficult to say retrospectively, like, that we should do inquiries on stuff that have happened when we already know what's happened and no action has been taken, and we're just spending so much money on things like this.
The reported feud between Prince Charles and Andrew over whether Princesses Beatrice and Eugene should be taxpayer-funded working royals, the Queen has said she is siding with her younger son. The fallout has seeped into the press as reported last week that the Duke of York, aged 56, penned a letter to his mother demanding that his daughter should pursue full-time royal duties and be moved into a better accommodation at Kensington Palace. So my first question is, should Beatrice and Eugene be full-time royals?
No, they are completely redundant. There's no point of them anymore. Now that baby George and baby Charlotte are around, they have no purpose. Frankly put. To be honest, the thing is, these people were just born. That's all they did. These people were just born, and then you're like, oh no, we want to give them taxpayer money that was hard earned, and they've never even held a real job in their lives.
I think that the thing I find most offensive about the whole comment is the fact that they have to be moved into a more suitable living accommodation in Kensington Palace. I'm sorry, but they have these apartments in New York that they live in currently. I don't see what their dire issue is. Maybe we could get people into better council housing or build more
get
council
some refugees
housing.
In for houses.
Exactly. Maybe we should put them in the Kensington Palace. I mean, they already have houses that are lovely big houses and they live on estates and stuff. I don't see what that issue is there, to be honest.
Royal bashing generally is quite a popular pastime amongst people nowadays, and that's understandable. Again, the royals are people who are a stream of history within this country and who have contributed over that time great stability that other countries would kill for in certain instances. Now you look at what's happening over in the US at the minute, and you look at the presidential election that's happening there. That will never happen in this country with regards to a head of state. Why? Because the head of state is somebody who, whether you like it or not, is born into that legacy, who is born into that dynasty. Now, we're not actually bothered, I don't think, and no one's really addressed the question of whether Eugenie and Beatrice themselves, because they just, I mean, that's neither here nor there, really, as to whether or not they specifically should be able to keep living in wherever. Obviously, it's opened up into a more general royal debate, and I will always side with the royals in those instances, because we have to look at the alternatives. It's very easy for us to just get annoyed about it, in the same way that we get annoyed about Brexit and various other sorts of typically conservative causes, and just write it off as being something that's irrelevant. But the truth is that the royal family is something that's very much worth protecting, not just for the cultural and the economic consequences, all positive, that they bring, but also for their political and their constitutional significance within our system.
This is URN.